From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The thousands of migrants heading to the United States in a caravan are still hundreds of miles from the border with Mexico. The numbers swelled from 2,000 when the caravan first commenced from Honduras to more than 7,000 in Mexico. But now, as fatigue and sickness sets in among the many families that are traveling, some with children, the numbers are reportedly dwindling. Still, President Donald Trump, who has sought to make political hay of the caravan ahead of the midterm elections, has reportedly ordered 800 troops to the U.S. border. He has repeatedly blamed the Democratic Party for the migrant caravan with no evidence and made no mention of the fact that Republicans have controlled all three branches of government for 2 years and failed to pass immigration reform laws. He also hasn't mentioned anything about the U.S. role inside Central American nations that creates conditions that drive refugees out of there. He has referred to the caravan as a national emergency. We turn now to Jose Artiga, executive director of Share El Salvador. He's a co-author of a new report on human rights abuses in Honduras. We had him on earlier this year when he had just returned from a trip to Honduras. Welcome back, Jose.
Thank you.
So first of all, let's talk about what's actually happening within the caravan of migrants. This is a caravan organized by the group Pueblos Sin Fronteras. It's a second one this year. This one's much larger than the first. As far as you know, what is the current status in Mexico of the caravan in terms of numbers, how people are doing, how far they are from the border with the U.S.?
Well, this is an accumulation of people that, you know, have been leaving Central America, especially Honduras. And when they heard that there was a caravan, they decided to join for safety. But it's the hundreds of people that are leaving in a daily basis. The caravan offers some safety in numbers. It's not the same to face, you know, a police checkpoint by yourself than to face it, you know, with several hundred or several thousand people. So they decided to join and move north. Perhaps the surprise is, you know, how many people decided to join, you know, people that perhaps were on the way or people that were thinking in leaving and decided to do it together. But this is something that is happening in a daily basis. This is nothing new. Perhaps many in the caravan don't have a clue that there are elections in the United States. You know, they are just living conditions that are exhausting them. You know, when you try to find a job, you know, when you try to protest, they face repression, they face persecution, and it's more like policies that are expelling them, policies that are telling them, you are not welcome here, you know, get out. And then in the other side, in the U.S., they face the same policy that said, we don't want you here. So it's it has the components, you know, for a major crisis in the making.
Let's talk about the report that you co-authored about the conditions inside Honduras. This is an aspect of the story that's certainly never mentioned by politicians, certainly never mentioned by President Trump, rarely mentioned even in our media coverage. The name of the report is The Struggle for Human Rights and Transformation in Honduras, a Faith Delegation's Observations. You were part of that Faith Delegation. What are the conditions within Honduras, which is where the caravan originated, although it's now passed through and accumulated people from elsewhere as well. What are the conditions within Honduras that have led to this exodus?
We were there in May with 13 religious leaders from the United States and visit people that have been detained, people that in the January inauguration of the president, I went to the streets and protest, you know, like we do it here in the United States when we don't like our president. They went to the street and they were captured and detained in conditions of, you know, torture, being incommunicado. You know, some of them were for 15 days, you know, in a room with no food or, you know, very, very difficult conditions. So we went and visited them and asked them, you know, why are you being detained? You know, why are you being persecuted? And they said, well, because we don't like this government, and we went to the street. In some cases, people were detained, you know, because they were the leader of the town. And so we took testimony, you know, and one after another one, they were very unhappy with the conditions. Some of them could be facing, you know, 10, 20 years in jail. So we expressed our solidarity, and we took notes, you know, we took notes and wrote the report, which is asking for stop, you know, persecution to people that are expressing their opinions on the street.
So there's multiple factors, it sounds like, that have driven people out of Honduras. And a lot of this is related to the political situation there with the recent elections that took place, and going before that to the U.S.-backed coup against the government of Manuel Zelaya. How much responsibility does the United States government bear in fostering these conditions?
I would say a lot of responsibility, because the elections that happened last November, the United Nations, the Organization of American States, doubted the results. You know, people said, you know, this is the counting of the votes, you know, was challenged by many. But the United States decided to endorse the results and kind of impose this person that technically should not have been elected, because the Constitution does not allow for one person to run a second term. So from the get-go, he was illegitimate. And then not only was not supposed to run, but he didn't win the elections. So by imposing this person, it kind of provoked, you know, a lot of demonstrations, a lot of unhappiness. And the response from the government was repression. You know, you go to the street and you will be persecuted. We witnessed that when we were early in the year in January, where peaceful demonstrations will be attacked, you know, by the police. Young people will be chased and then put in jail. So when the United States, you know, is endorsing something that is illegitimate, something that is illegal, this is the result. You know? And then when you go to the countryside, when you go to the communities, you see the level of poverty. You know, even though the United States is sending aid, that aid is mainly for military purposes. It's not addressing simple things like education, you know, health, and creation of jobs. So people are desperate. You know, when you see a family with two or three children, you know, deciding to leave, you know, that is dramatic, because it's not a secret that the route of Guatemala and Mexico to the U.S. is extremely dangerous. So when you decide to leave the conditions in Honduras, it means that those conditions are worse than the route north.
It's incredible, because to undertake a journey like this on foot across countries, thousands of miles, knowing that you're going to be met with troops at the border, being preyed upon by, you know, criminals. It is obvious desperation that is driving these folks northward. And yet Donald Trump has described this almost like an invasion, calling it a national emergency, as if these are people that are coming to endanger Americans here in the United States, when most likely these will be part of a labor force that the U.S. relies on. most likely these people would be, people who contributed to the tax base of the United States and are hoping to find a safe and decent life. What do you make of how much political traction Trump is attempting to make of the timing of this caravan? And do you think it's having an effect here in the United States? Because recent polls have shown Republicans are, count, quote, illegal immigration as one of the top issues that drives them to vote for Republicans.
Well, I think, you know, that there are differences between the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. But it was Obama and Hillary that endorsed the coup in 2009.
In Honduras, they were,
In Honduras. They were the ones that says, let's remove a democratically elected government and impose this other one. The Trump administration is
more aggressive. When Trump lays the blame for the current crisis at the Democrats' feet, he doesn't, of course, mean that the U.S. backed a coup in Honduras, but in a way, what he's saying touches on the truth inadvertently.
it's a little bit, like imposing or implementing similar policies that are being implemented in the U.S. now in Honduras. So rich people don't pay taxes. The government does not address the needs of the people. Here in the U.S., there's creation of more poor people or people that will not be able to access health and this or that. In Honduras, because they were already poor, when you apply the same formula, you create an explosion. So when you see the numbers, I think the call is to the people of faith, to the human kind in the United States, to say this is a big problem. We want your help. We want you to pay attention. And I think that the caravan has done that. This is not the first one, and it's not going to be the last one. Perhaps with the kind of policies that are being imposed, we might see millions of people leaving Central America. You do not see people leaving Bolivia. You do not see people leaving Ecuador, which are poor countries, but governments there are kind of developing policies that maintain, some level of living wage, if you want. But you see it from Central America. The companies are coming. And let me give you one example. If you live in the coast, in the Atlantic coast, you are a Garifuna, this African descent, beautiful people that have been there for 200 years. Now you have these big corporations coming to develop tourism. And they say, you need to remove everybody from the area because these beaches are heavenly, beautiful, and we want to develop, this resort. When you move those people, there is nowhere to go. Same thing when you are with the palm oil, where they are planting billions of trees, and they need to remove the people. So the policies are displacing people. So where do you go?
Right. So there's so it's not a mystery why people are leaving. It's very easy to identify these very clear policies, corporate-driven policies, governmental policies. And I'm so glad you brought up the point that there are countries in Latin America where people aren't leaving. And if there's a correlation with what sort of policies, whether those are people-centered policies or not. So in the report that you co-authored about the human rights situation in Honduras, what are the recommendations that you make to the U.S. government, who seems, to think that the only way to deal with a migration from these countries is to build a wall on the border? What recommendations would you make to actually treat the source of the problem, the cause of the problem?
Well, the first one is to cut U.S. military aid. So when Trump says, because of the government is not doing its job, and he will go in to cut military aid to Honduras, we agree with Trump.
He specified military aid? He said he would cut aid, but I don't know if I've heard. Has he said military aid?
Most of the aid is military.
But he may not be saying that because it's he might be relying on people's ignorance and think that we're just sending, aid to these countries that's benevolent. But you're right. If we did cut military aid, that would be a good start.
If we cut military aid and leave the people alone, that will be the best help we could do. Second, we need to hold accountable the democratic institutions and respect the will of the people. You know, the people did not elect this government. So this government should go. You know, and that's the demand on the street. It says, fuera Ho, you know, the president has to go. That will be the second one. The third one will be stop the persecution of the people. You know, people have the right to demonstrate. You know, people have the right to go to the street. They should not be captured. They should not be attacked because they are expressing. One thing that we should notice is that the people are demonstrating peacefully. Nobody's taking arms. Nobody's, you know, doing violently.
So you're suggesting the U.S. government should pressure the Honduran government to respect these rights inside Honduras.
Exactly. Mm. Exactly. Because otherwise, it's like a pressure that is building up, you know, and people will exploit in, you know, things that we don't want to see. You know, nobody wants violence. You know, the people themselves don't want violence. But when we corner the people of El Salvador in the 80s, you know, a war developed. And this is not only a situation in one country, it's the whole region, you know, the whole region that is in turmoil, you know. And what they want is, I mean, when you ask anybody on the caravan, say, what do you want? He said, I want a job. They are not asking for handouts or special programs. They say, we would like a job where we can use our labor to sustain our families. It's kind of simple.
In the report, you also say that the U.S. Congress could pass the Berta Cáceres Act, of course, named for the slain human rights and indigenous environmental leader in Honduras. What is that act? Is that would that address the military aid aspect you were discussing earlier?
Yes, you know, the Berta Cáceres, you know, a prominent human rights environmental leader, is target, is killed a couple years ago, and no investigation so far. So the law is asking to cut, you know, again, cut military aid to the police, to the military, and force the government, you know, to investigate these cases. So the U.S. is very much involved in Honduras, you know, it's very much involved and is sending mixed messages, you know. In one hand, this administration in the U.S. is saying, we don't want these refugees, we want to cut, you know, to close the border. But in the other hand, is putting them on fire, you know, and physically pushing them out of Honduras. So that's not a humane policy. It's not a policy that we as a country or as people in this country should aspire. We should reach, you know, for a peaceful a coexistence with our neighbors. You know, in Central America are our neighbors.
Now, the Jose, what do you expect is going to happen when these migrants that are part of this caravan reach the U.S. border? I mean, there have already been migrants coming in, sort of, you know, in the normal migration patterns have continued separate from the caravan. And for those people who arrived this summer as families, of course, we know that they were separated, parents separated from their children. Now that practice has been halted, although some children remain separated. But there's this new idea that Trump has been putting forward, the binary choice idea, where parents will be told that they can either, you know, choose to remain detained with their children or choose separation. Is that what's awaiting these migrants? Or is there something worse, given that there are going to be 800 troops on the border, it seems like?
I think this is a larger problem. It's not a matter of this caravan, you know, will they get in or not in the U.S.? This is an explosion of society, and people will be leaving Honduras. They are being expelled from Honduras. So some of them will stay in Mexico if they can find new conditions there. And we hope that the new government of López Obrador will embrace some of them. Others might go to other parts of the region. Some might find a way to go into the U.S. But I think the main thing, the main point is to, they are screaming, you know, help us. let's do it legally. You know, they have legitimate cases. So under international law, they should be able to receive political asylum. Perhaps solutions will come from other countries. You know, can, you know, Canada or can Europe or South America say, you know, we will take these mothers? So it's a call for help. And the solution is not a one-way solution. The solution might be a multi-solution. And I think that the beauty of this is that they are asking people in the U.S. help us. You know, we are calling at this very moment because we are desperate. I myself, you know, have right now a two-month-old niece. A granddaughter, and I cannot imagine, you know, carrying this baby the way they are doing it. You know? So when you see those images, the call is very powerful. You know, these are human beings. You know, these are not terrorists. These are not ISIS people. They are not violent. If you search them, nobody has a weapon or anything. These people are just escaping a situation that has been created, and the U.S. is part of that.
The images of these families fleeing and heading to the U.S. is so similar to the images of Syrian and Afghan families fleeing their war-torn and impoverished nations and trying to cross the Mediterranean to come to Europe. I mean, we're seeing these migration patterns globally, and they really should be sort of seen as connected and as, you know, desperate people trying to find a good life for themselves. But President Trump, even before these caravan migrants have entered the U.S., President Trump started calling them, quote, illegal immigrants, which, of course, is a very dehumanizing term. But really, technically, these are people who are coming to apply for asylum. So those are two very distinct things. When somebody crosses into the border without seeking asylum, the technical term might be illegal alien. But if you're coming to the border with the intention of applying for asylum, as you were saying earlier, this is actually enshrined in international law. Now, Trump has recently decided to embrace the term nationalist. Jose, I'm sure you saw that recently in a speech. He said, this is an unpopular term, but I'm going to say it. I am a nationalist. Isn't that a very, very disturbing sign? Isn't that a very clear indication that when you say you're a nationalist, you've basically said you don't want any part of being an international community?
We live in a worldwide community. You know, the markets don't have borders, and I think the root of the problem is that a small group of people, you know, in the north, you know, a very, very small group of people, wants profits with no limits. And they arrive to a country like Honduras that is a rich country. Honduras is not a poor country, but try to steal all the resources and then leaving the locals with nothing. And that's just wrong. And that's happening all over the world. The same model is being applied, you know, in Africa and, you know, in the Middle East and in other places. Mm-hmm. So what we will see if we don't change is forcing people out of their home. So I think the call is for our humanity. You know, we as human beings, you know, cannot allow this to happen. And I think the call is each of us can do something. You know, first, you know, start understanding what the root of the problem is, and then be part of the solution. You know, let's start a dialogue. Let's start embracing our refugees from all over the world, not only from Central America, and see them as a human beings. You know, because if we lose our humanity by ignoring them or not helping, we are victims too. You know, we will become immune to suffering, and that cannot happen.
What do you think the impact of this caravan will be on the midterm elections? As you said earlier, the people traveling in the caravan are likely unaware that there are these historic elections happening. They are simply trying to find a better life. But of course, There is an election happening, so it's a very interesting and important political moment in the United States. Democrats or people identifying as Democrats or liberals or progressives see what happened this summer in terms of the Republican and Trump-led attacks on immigrants as really inspiring them to get out and vote. Republicans have a completely polarized and opposite view because, of course, they're influenced by what their president is saying, constantly vilifying and demonizing immigrants. And as we saw, these suspicious packages and pipe bombs targeting the people that Trump criticizes, words matter. So when Trump is inspiring, someone violent to take aim at Democrats, he's essentially also, his words naturally are generating probably greater hate crimes against immigrants here in the United States. So with this migrant caravan coming just days before the midterm election, will it have an impact, you think, on politics?
I think the elections, there are many factors that will impact the elections, from people that will not be able to vote, from messages, will confuse people. So perhaps the caravan is a component. I wouldn't say a major component, because the people that elected Trump, they were already against immigrants. I don't think that they will change further to the right. The people that that see the humanity of the refugees perhaps will not change. So I think that the problem in Central America will go beyond, election day. If we don't address it, it will continue beyond the elections. And we hope that more people will understand and will decide to mobilize and find a way to support them.
Jose, where can people read the report that we've been discussing that you co-authored? And also, is there anything, any place online you can recommend where people can find out resources or even support the efforts helping immigrants?
Yes, you can visit our website, I share that, like share-elsalvador.org. That's share-elsalvador.org. You can also find there links to the Mercy Sisters and to the Unitarian Universalists that co-sponsor the report.
We'll link to that from our website. We'll also try to link directly to the report. Jose, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
Jose Artiga is executive director of Share El Salvador and co-author of a new report on human rights abuses in Honduras. We've been discussing the migrant caravan heading to the U.S. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and now on Instagram at RU with Sonali.